This is For Advisors by Advisors. I'm your host, Evan J. Mayer, and today we have a very special guest in Mr. Matt Landon.
Oh, fantastic. This is a huge crowd.
Huge crowd. Huge, huge, huge. How you doing, Matt?
Doing well. Glad to be here.
Awesome. Well, glad to have you. Matt is the interim CEO at Cemex Financial Group. Cemex Financial Group is a full services wealth management retirement planning firm, RIA, based in Greensboro and Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Founded in 2003, so just celebrating your 20-year anniversary this year. Congratulations on that.
Yeah, thanks. One more year and we can start drinking.
Absolutely. And then you also, not only do you own the RIA, but you also have Cemex Inc., which does insurance and risk solutions, and then Cemex Tax, which offers tax solutions. So you kind of offer everything in-house, yeah?
Yep. Yeah, we try to keep it... I think it's important to be able to be a one-stop shop for folks, but at the same time, understand what needs to be sourced out. So it's one of those things where as clients have come in with needs, we've continued to expand what we're offering because we started out just doing annuities and then you realize pretty quick, that's not going to fill the gap. It's like there's more needs here. So then you branch into the managed money and then it's just kind of grown from there.
Excellent. Awesome. And it looks like you got licensed in 2017. Did you start with them or prior?
Yeah, I started in 2017, got licensed same year, and it was amazing. It's like drinking from a fire hose when you first get started. But one thing that I think is really important is, and this is for anybody that's listening who wants to start a firm or is interested in becoming an advisor, I think it's really important to partner with somebody who has been in the industry for a long time, who has a lot of experience. It drives me nuts when people go, oh, I passed my Series 65 or I got my 763. I know it all. It's like, okay, you passed a multiple choice test. You really start learning once you're sitting in front of clients and start doing planning and things of that nature.
Excellent. And from like studying your background a little bit, it looks like you were a deacon or are you still a deacon at this point?
I am. Yes. So I'm still a deacon in our church. And that's something that is very, it's something that I feel like your faith should permeate through everything you do. So that's something that's very impassionate to me. We've got a small local church that we're part of a church plant. Started a few years ago. And so we've been growing in Winston and it's been challenging. Our launch service was during COVID. So that was a fun start. I'm sure you remember everybody went to Zoom meetings for everything. And so we were supposed to start our first Sunday. And then all of a sudden they go, yeah, you're going to have to do that over the internet. We went, what? So it's been a learning process, but it's been good.
So how many members of the congregation at this point?
So at this point on a good Sunday, there's about 75. On a bad Sunday, there's 35. It's kind of one of those. But we started with a core group of about 25 folks that left our sending church. And our sending church, it wasn't a bad thing. The pastor stood up and said, hey, we're going to pay your pastor salary for 2 years, and we're going to give you guys funds to get started. We want you to go start a church. And so we started off with, like I said, about 25, 30 folks, and we've about doubled since then. So it's been slow growth, but good.
Excellent. So tell us how you got started in the business. When did you get started? Why did you get started? And then what connected you with Cemex?
So Cemex, there's a family connection there. So my father-in-law is the owner of the firm. He started the firm 20 years ago.
Is that Jay?
That would be Jay.
Okay.
And so he approached me about coming on board. This was about a year and a half after Kristen and I had gotten married. And I looked at him and I very politely said, absolutely not. I have no interest in working with family.
Yeah.
And long story short, I had some things going on with the job I was at prior to this. And I just didn't love what I was doing. I was in management in a distribution firm. We're slinging a lot of alcohol, which was great. But at the same time, I just didn't feel like I was doing anything good for the world, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
And so he came back to me and he's like, Matt, I really feel like this would be a good industry for you. I really feel like you would connect with the clients and what we're trying to accomplish. He's like, we at least just sit down and talk about it. I was like, all right, well, I'd be an idiot not to at least sit down. So we talked, kind of went through things, and it's worked out amazing. From the moment I first started, I realized what we do when you have a good financial advisor provides so much value to your clients, and that peace of mind that they get when they have just a full-fledged plan, they understand the different parts and pieces. Our mission at Cemex is to ensure our clients can focus more on their lives and less on their money. And that's something that I think should permeate through everything you do. And so it's been great. But when I started out studying for my Series 65, life insurance, all that kind of good stuff, I was working front office, processing, paraplanning, every piece and facet of the company before I started meeting with clients to really understand what are you doing from the ground up.
Excellent. And is your wife involved in the business as well, or she never got into it?
Never got into it. It's amazing. I try and talk to her about our finances, and her response to that is, "Oh, I don't need to know that. You handle it." And I was like, "Well, what if something happens to me?" She was like, "I'll go into the office and talk to everybody that you work with." She was like, "I'll be fine. I'm not worried about it." She has zero interest. She's happily an ICU nurse. She's an ICU nurse and a cardiac nurse, and so that's what she focuses on.
Excellent. And you started in 17, got licensed, kind of learning the ropes from your dad. There's also a bunch of other advisors, it looks like, that are there. And as you grew into the practice, we noticed you became interim CEO. When did you take that role over?
Yeah, so I took on that position about 2 months ago. So there's been a transition, and the interim is going to be dropping off here in just a few weeks. So that effective January 1, I'll be the CEO of the firm moving forward. And the reason for that is twofold. And it speaks to a little bit of the way we do things at our firm, maybe slightly differently than a lot of guys. One thing is we feel very strongly that you need to have, when we're talking to clients, you got to be talking succession planning, right? Well, it's the same thing for an advisory practice. When Jay has for a long time had on his mind wanting to make sure that CEMEX has an enduring legacy that moves forward, and that it's not that he's retiring, but he wants to make sure that the company's going to continue moving forward, right? And a lot of the day-to-day operations and the grind of running a company, it can kind of wear on you after a while. And so he said, I want to be more focused on the 5-year, 10-year, more of a board of directors kind of approach than being in the office on the day in, day out, handling everything that goes along with taking care of book of business as well as running a company. And so it's been a transitional process that actually started over the last 2 years. We started an operations and ownership team. And so it's been a slow learning curve, but in a way that has been intentional to not cause any disruption for the company, yeah, for the clients.
Yeah. So I looked at the EDV. You guys are managing about $300 million. Is this a top-down, pretty heavy top situation? Or is the book of business pretty much split among the different advisors that are there?
Yeah. So the way we do things is the clients are CEMEX clients, and then the advisors are taking care of them and are servicing them. But that's where I was speaking to where it's a little bit different than a lot of places in the fact that we work in teams by design. So when a client comes on board, they're really buying into the CEMEX way of doing things. And then the advisor they're working with, they kind of have that primary point of contact, but there's always a secondary advisor who's aware of what's going on. So there's that team approach. And the reason we do that is, so if a client calls in, for example, I'm going to be at a conference for the next 3 days. Client calls in and works with me and they say, "Hey, Matt's out of pocket. He's out of office, but he can get back to you next week, or Michael can answer your question right now." Instead of going, "Who the heck is Michael and what does he know?" They go, "Oh yeah, I've worked with Michael. I know who he is. He's familiar with my accounts." And it's just, the idea is everything around taking care of the client the best way you can.
Excellent. And I'm guessing it wasn't always that way for Jay. I'm guessing at some point, as being the figurehead of the firm, he might have been the sole relationship situation with the client, and then eventually decided. Do you know the history of CEMEX, and when did he start branching out more into that team approach, that company approach with the client?
Yeah, so it started out just kind of like a one-man show, right? And then he brought on a sub-advisor, and then he kind of brought on another guy. And some of the staff has changed and evolved over time. Really, we started leaning into that team approach, I would say, in 2019, early 2019. And that is something that our clients have responded incredibly well to. They appreciate it. That's the same reason we have a leadership team, same reason we have kind of that like I said, that mindset that says it's not one set of eyes, it's more than one set of eyes. Another thing that kind of differentiates us from a lot of firms is that all of our advisors are either a CFP or in the process of becoming a CFP. That's something that we felt very strongly. We challenged everybody that works here to say, "Hey, we feel like that's the gold standard. You need to meet it."
I as a CFP as well, I concur. I think there's credentials, but there's actually being able to implement what you're doing with clients on a real life basis. That's not multiple choice. And that's what the CFP does help ensure. Obviously, nothing beats time and tenure in the business, but getting those certifications is absolutely hugely important. It looks like most of the money you manage is on a discretionary basis. Are you guys using models to model things out? And when you do that, are you modeling using mutual funds, ETFs, individual equities, or how are you currently managing assets?
Yeah, so we're doing different models. We've got some ETF models, then we also have some individual stock models. And it really depends on the client situation, their need, also money type. I'm going to invest in non-qualified account differently than a Roth, risk tolerance, things of that nature. But yeah, we've got some different models that we utilize. We've got some proprietary, and we also utilize things from Morningstar and various sources. But I like the ETF side of things. I'm very anti-mutual funds. I've got some strong opinions about mutual funds. I feel like the high expense ratios inside of them, the delay in trading, I feel like it creates, especially tax consequences. I'm just not a fan. I feel like anything where you're getting a commission, like a big, heavy commission off of a product, I feel like it's going to lean you towards putting somebody and say, oh, if I put another 2 million here, we hit that breakpoint, my commission goes up. Well, are you putting them in there because it's the best product? Or are you doing it because you're trying to get a better commission?
Yeah, right. Yeah, you do have the advisory share mutual fund class as well. And again, you're not talking to about, I'm somebody that out of all the money we manage here, I have zero in mutual funds, so I'm not a proponent. But there is the fee-based advisory share class too that we
do. Yeah, but I guess I feel the same way when it comes to annuities. And I say this as someone who offers annuities. We work with annuities, especially fixed indexed annuities for the right client. I think it's a great product. But it really irks me when people will show an income plan and 70% of your money is going into annuities. It's like, what are you doing, bud? You know? So something we do is like, if you show a plan with an annuity, and this is something we tell our advisors, if you show a plan with an annuity, you better be showing them a plan without them.
Yeah.
And you need to have two plans and you need to be able to prove why it's the right product for the person. Cause I do not want you just chasing commissions.
What are you guys doing on the fixed income side? Are you using ETFs for fixed income as well?
Yeah. So on the fixed income side, we're using some ETFs, and then also we're using some short-term treasury bonds, like going out and buying individual treasury bonds. I mean, with interest rates where they are right now, it's pretty phenomenal. So it's a blend, but mostly ETFs.
And do you have a dedicated trader that actually goes out and buys those in the individual accounts for you?
Yep.
Or yeah, so it's not necessarily the advisors that are maybe assigned to the client, but more a trader that's behind the scenes handling all that.
Yeah, there's a trader that's handling things, but the advisors are still tasked with looking at it and making sure it still makes sense. So the reason for that is if you're putting it in as part of a model, let's say we're going to have 40% in treasury bills for the indefinite future, trader's handling that. If it's something where you're temporarily wanting to park some cash because you're getting a better rate of return than you would have having it in your savings account, but we don't know where it's going, the advisor needs to be looking at that and staying on top of it.
Excellent. Very cool. So talk to me a little bit about fixed fee and hourly fee. What percentage of your guys' business is set on fee revenue, discretionary fee revenue, and then how much is on an hourly or a fixed fee?
Yeah, so that's where we do things a little bit differently. Everything is on that fixed fee. We're not charging by the hour for any kind of income plan creation. That's something that we can do. If all you want is just an analysis and an income plan, that's great. But right now, we give everyone, any prospect that comes in through the door, we put together a full-fledged income plan. We do an analysis for them. We do a risk analysis, fee analysis, tax analysis.
So it's part of your managed money fee, you know, as far as what you do. And is it a percentage of AUM or is it a fixed fee no matter what the AUM is?
It's a percentage based on AUM. But that's actually something we've been looking at potentially changing because it's, I don't know, I think you probably feel free to agree or disagree with this. Managing 1 million is really not that different from managing 3 million.
So what I will say to you is we have advisors that are fully fixed fee, and fixed fee to me means not percentage AUM.
Right.
So if they got 1 million or they got 3 million based upon that need, they're going to charge $10,000 or whatever the fee is. So the way I look at it, there's hundreds of thousands of financial advisors in the world. Everybody has a choice on how they want to get compensated as long as they're doing the right thing by the client. That's all I care about. So as far as do I agree, some people have different special needs children or complex needs. So I think everybody's different, but I would agree with you that being able to asset allocate $1 million to $3 million is basically the same.
Well, and I think you touched on something really key there, which is around if the client's getting value for what they're paying. That's the big thing that I preach. It's like if you go to the grocery store, you can buy an apple or you can buy an organic apple. Well, that organic apple is going to cost you more. Personally, I prefer the organic apples. I feel like they're fresher. They taste better. They're great. It's like, I'm willing to spend the extra money to get the one with the pink sticker versus the one with the blue sticker, right? But it reaches a certain point where I walk in the door and I see all these apples with blue stickers. And I go, honey, what happened? I like the organic apples. And she goes, yeah, but they cost X. And I go, you know what? Blue sticker's fine. Not paying that. That's outrageous. It's like there's a point where you go, okay, there's value in what you're providing, and there's a point where it's not. And I think as long as you're providing value and you can justify your fee, I have no qualms with it. It's if you just put everyone into the same model, you're 62, so you go into X, We're not going to talk taxes. We're not going to talk estate planning. We're not going to look at anything beyond just the basics, just the account I'm managing.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to charge you 1.5% on it. That doesn't feel like you're getting value.
Yeah, that's a whole different story. So my guess is, and correct me if I'm wrong, Jay, when he started the firm and what he's done in the past was a percentage of AUM, and you guys are slowly trying to convert to maybe a fixed fee platform. Is that accurate?
It's a conversation that we're having. I think the big thing around it is what's providing the best value for the client. And yeah. So it's not something that I think we're going to change overnight, but I think it's important. And I'm going to say this from an ownership perspective. I think you should be not fiddling with everything for the sake of just changing stuff. But I think you should be constantly evaluating your firm and what you're doing and how you're doing it. And are you doing it the best way you can? And so part of that would be pull it on an annual basis. Look at your fee structure. It's like, are you overcharging? Are you undercharging? Because actually, I know one advisor that doubled their fees because he looked at everything and he said, we're giving this away. We have so much value and we need to be charging more. So I don't want to seem like I'm sitting here going, we're in a race to the bottom. How can we do that fee compression as fast as possible? But it's all about, are you doing what's appropriate for the client and also taking care of the firm?
I concur with you. And I think one of the, as managing my company, it's one of the things we look at actually on a quarterly basis is, where are we? What are we doing for our clients? What are we adding new or exciting to our clients? What can we do better? And there are new fees. There are new ways of charging fees. And what's the net benefit to the client? What are you doing on top of managing money? And as you alluded to, and you're 100% right, it's probably, I don't know what the statistical numbers are, but of people that are charging for managed accounts, how many of them are just simply managing assets and not managing plans and managing people? And I think there's a big difference in all three of those. So what's the future? You're coming into the CEO role. Jay's taken, well, we're not going to ever say backseat because he's not, I'm sure, not yet. And we're changing the structure. This is dad, this is father-in-law. It doesn't happen that quick. But over time, as you evolve and you try to grow this into a practice that, and my guess is you being a younger type advisor, newer to the business, you're definitely wanting to grow and you're wanting to grow the practice. Where do you see the firm in 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 20 years from now?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I think it's important to look in 5-year increments. I think if you go 20 years out, there's so many things that are going to be wildly different. It's like, it's difficult to see where the future holds 20 years from now. But I can tell you this right now, my goal, if you want to go 20 years out, my goal is to have all of my current employees retire from Summit. That's one of my goals.
What's the 5-year plan?
5-year plan? We want to double. I see us being somewhere between 500 and 600 million in AUM in the next 4 years. And then if we go 10 years out, I could see it being easily 2 billion.
You know, and as a CEO, what's your plan to get you to double? Is it bringing new advisors in? Is it more connect with the beneficiaries and existing relationships and try to grow more organically? What's your vision?
Yeah. So there's two growth tracks. Okay. There's organic and then there's inorganic growth. Okay. Organic growth, you can break that down into warm leads and cold leads, being referrals versus just folks that hear you on TV, radio, podcast, seminars, things of that nature, right? On the organic side, I think you want to have a lot of growth. We have primarily grown from referrals over the past couple of years. And I think if you are not tapping in to your client base, if they are not your biggest marketing funnel, I feel like you're doing something wrong. It's like you should have raving fans and having a clear process of when you ask for referrals, how to ask for referrals, make it easy for your clients. If your clients love you, they're going to want to talk about you. You got to give them the tools in order to do that, right? So it's like if you haven't done it, you need to have a very clean, clear process to make it easy for referrals. Do events, bring them in, do educational events, do fun events, do all that kind of stuff. Also, you need to be marketing. If people don't know who you are, they're not going to come in. You don't want to be the best kept secret in town. And then from an inorganic growth side, from a kind of a mergers and acquisition side, I think you always need to be open to acquiring smaller firms and taking on that book of business. But you need to be very careful about that. It's something that I'm always open to and looking at firms and it's never off the table. But it has to be the right advisor. It has to be the right client base. They really have to buy in with what we're doing. And so I don't think you should just go out and just buy the first firm that somebody throws up and says, hey, I got this book of business. You want to acquire it? Probably not.
Have you guys been acquiring or has there been a recent acquire?
That's something that we've got some things that we're fleshing out. So there's some things that may be on the table early next year, but nothing done and dusted yet.
Nothing set in stone.
Yeah. Like I said, I'm always open to having a conversation, and it's something I think is key, whether we're talking about doing an acquisition or whether we're looking at a new piece of fintech or anything else. You always want to look for the no. You always want to get to the no. So it's like, if I'm looking at changing CRMs, well, do you have everything I need? Yes, yes, nope. Okay, well, then we're not doing that. Move on. It was like, so at any point you should be looking for that. Is there a reason not to move forward? No, well then keep moving forward.
Got it. Lastly, what's a good piece of advice? You know, you started out in the business a few years ago. Jay was there, luckily. That's always a great thing to walk into. Obviously, you want to be your own advisor out there and do your own thing, and kind of interested to see what happens with you becoming CEO. That's interesting to kind of see the next progressions for you. What would be some advice you would give to a younger advisor coming aboard?
I would say with a younger advisor, two things. One, it really helps to partner up with somebody who is more experienced, who can show you the ropes, right? Who you can learn and just absorb knowledge off of. There's something to be said for just getting reps in and being in front of clients and understanding situations. There's the book knowledge, and then there's the walking through it. And there's no substitute for just being in front of clients and taking care of a book of business. Also, I would say you got to walk before you can run. I would argue, at this point, you put me in front of somebody who's got 10 million investable assets. They're looking at setting up their own foundation. They've got a different trust. They maybe have that child with special needs. I got a lot of things. I'm going to look at them and go, this isn't the first time I've seen this. I'm very familiar. I'm very comfortable. I understand it. Man, the first time I was trying to walk through figuring out how to take RMDs out of an annuity, I'm like, I don't even know what these forms are. It was like, you don't know anything. And that's where I think it's important not to just walk in and go, all right, I'm licensed, take it and run. You're going to find success, but you're going to chase your own tail a lot. I think you can learn from somebody who's more experienced, and I think it's really important to do that. And then also, don't focus on the short term. If you're getting caught up on, like I said, on that short term commission, or how am I going to make the most money this year? If you are truly taking care of people, if you're really trying to do what's best for clients, the money will come. And I think there are some people that are in this industry from a greed standpoint. That's not why you should be doing this. You should really be doing this because you care for people. If you're a numbers nerd, that always helps. You know, it's like, I love the numbers. I love diving into the financials. But if you don't have a heart to help the people you're sitting in front of, you need to go into a different industry or question, why did I start this?
Yeah, very key point. And I think, look, even if you go in initially with the idea of making green, you're not going to make green until you start helping people. And that's the bottom line. So Matt, pleasure to have you. If an advisor wants to reach out to you, is in the local Carolina area and wants to get a hold of you, how do they get a hold of you?
Yeah, easiest way to do it is probably to shoot me an email, just matt@semax.com. You can find us on our website, it's just semax.com. I've got a pretty low LinkedIn, Facebook profile. I kind of hate social media. It feels like an easy way to just argue.
I'm not going to lie to you. We like to at least do a little background on the advisors we work with, and we were trying to find something on LinkedIn or something, and you're right. So as CEO, piece of advice, hire a social media person just so that you're out there, because people are going to look you up, the younger generation, as you guys are building. So,
all right. So let's do this. I'll come back on in 2 years and let's see where we're at from a company standpoint and my social media presence. How's that sound?
100%. It can't hurt you. Worst case scenario, you hire a summer intern that gets some stuff up for you. So
I'll do it. I'll start on LinkedIn right away.
You got it, man. Hey, pleasure to have you. Awesome. For those of you, hopefully you enjoyed today's episode, found Matt interesting, make sure you subscribe, and we'll see you at the next one. Thank you.